Welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Jakari Jackson. It's Friday, November 29th, 2013, and hopefully if you're lucky and you're here in the States, you have some time to sit back and reflect on what you're thankful of. You know, hopefully you're not thankful about the new PlayStation or the new Xbox. You're thankful about things that really matter in life. And one guy who is very happy just to be alive is Mario Lopez. He is a war veteran who was badly burned. Since returning to the States, Mario has become an ordained minister and also runs a very successful art gallery. He sat down with Gigi Arnetta to tell us more.
Joining us live here in studio tonight is Mario Lopez. He's an Army vet, a wonderful painter, and he also has a ministry called HowIKnow.org, and you can check that out. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So when did you decide you wanted to get into the military? Was it a family thing, or was it just something you had and you just wanted to go fight, or what happened?
After seeing the Twin Towers fall, it moved me a lot. And then 2003 we went in, and I was a senior then, and I was looking at my computer teacher and just watching all the troops go into Iraq. And I was just like, I want to be there, you know, I need to be there for the atrocities that happened on September 11th.
So you had knowingness. There was a knowingness that pulled you, is that what?
Yes.
Yeah. And so when you got there, were you wanting to do several tours, or when you got there, were you like, okay, this isn't really what I thought it would be? What was your perspective?
No, I was first a reservist, and I thought that I need to go active duty because I want to do this all the time. You know, it was a lot of fun. So I did in 2005. And shortly after that, I deployed to Iraq. And then it was everything I hoped it would be. It was a great mission, great command, great hours, great climate. And just loved what we were doing for the Iraqi people. I was there whenever they first started voting.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah.
All right.
And so I was just like, wow, you know, making a difference.
See freedom happening.
Yeah. So I thought we were spreading seeds of freedom, you know.
Exactly.
And then I came back home, and I was trained, you know, for about a year and a half. Everything changed, you know, every command from the squad leader all the way up to the general changed, and it was completely different as far as, you know, the command that was in charge. Everything was different. And
is that something you can talk about, or is that
yeah I can talk about that. I mean, yeah, I can talk about that
for people who might not understand that. Can you explain that statement?
The general that was in charge of our missions changed all the way down to my squad leader, like the person who micromanages me. You know, changed. Everything changed. And standard operating procedures changed. Our mission changed. Ours changed. I went to a different country. You know, just...
Do you know why that happened?
Oh, well, because we were a different country, and they had different standard operating procedures. But in Iraq, we didn't have anybody, nobody lost their life in Iraq, except for one person committed suicide. But as far as, you know, engaging with the enemy, no one died.
So it's really a completely different mission as far as the ground. Tell us about what happened after the IED.
After the IED, I got, flown to Germany, and then from Germany got flown to Brooke Army Medical in San Antonio, and was treated by the best doctors in the world, and they did a good job. And some people say, well, usually older folks who don't really care about what they say, they're like, you know, are you going to have any more surgeries? And I tell them, no, this is as good as it's going to get. Okay? It's a lot worse before, you know.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about your testimony, but first I want to find out about that incredible arm you got there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if our audience got to see it during the show. So you have a bionic arm.
Yeah, it's a prosthetic. I don't know what they call it, bionic, but I don't know. I could be wrong.
Looks pretty bionic.
Yeah. It's great technology the Army is giving to Wounded Warriors.
So. Do you train with that arm? They put you through a lot of PT?
It took me maybe about 6 months to get it down. And it's got three functions. The elbow, the rotating the wrist, and then the hand to grab things like coffee mug or keys or phone.
Now, does it use your nerves or your muscles, or how does it talk?
It uses my muscles in my arm, because I still have a little remnant of my arm, just a little, and it reacts to the electrical impulses our muscles give, and so I have my bicep and my tricep still.
Okay.
Still in there. So one electrode's hooked up to my bicep and one electrode's hooked up to my tricep. And then, I rotate and use the elbow and everything. It's like I can best explain it as modes on a wristwatch, a digital wristwatch. You know, you can put it in different modes to do different functions. That's what this does. And, so I just get it to do whatever.
Did you have a tattoo on that arm?
Yeah, there you go. It's
wow.
just something the people who do the skins just were like, come on, get something cool, make this hard for us. And I was like, okay, well, I'm planning on doing speeches and presentations and business meetings, so.
So what do you have? It's beautiful.
So it's like Terminator type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Your cyborgish arm there. Yeah,
it's like cyborg. Really, and I have a little bit up here, so I can hide it and make them happy. Like,
because you are talking to people in the church a lot.
Yes, yes. Me and my wife have a ministry. It's called howiknow.org.
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 How did you come to find the Lord? Were you always in the church, or tell us a little bit about?
I grew up in the church. My parents had been going forever. Then my grandfather, he has a church in San Diego, Texas, and so as I was growing up in my high school type years, we were in church in San Diego, and I'm from Alice, Texas, and we would go to church in my grandpa's church. So I grew up in the church. My mom's actually a minister there now also. And so I've always been involved in the church. But I put my, Christianity to me was just something I did on Sunday. It wasn't a part of my life until, I had some crazy supernatural experiences. And, as you can imagine, And then after that, I decided that I wanted to get closer and I wanted to know more about God and about Jesus. And I met my wife, and her being an educator, kind of helped facilitate, putting a presentation together and moving in that direction. And so that's what we do now. I tell my testimony. And, it's pretty powerful. And,
what supernatural experience happened?
I believe in, 2009, I, was, overdosing on my medication. I was taking too much and drinking at the same time. And, one particular night, I remember, feeling my heartbeat slow and my breath slow. And, slow down. And I was thinking, wow, you could really die tonight. This could be the night. And as I was talking to myself, I was like, well, if I die, I should go to heaven. Cause after everything I've been through, after I've done all the sacrifices I made to my country, I should go to heaven. But that was false, because no good works will get you into heaven. It's you know, trusting the Lord. And
so many people miss that.
Yeah.
They think that, oh, well, I'm good at, I did this for so-and-so, I do this for the community, I've done so much on this planet since, you know, God put me here, so I should be okay. And they miss the message of grace.
Right, yeah. And, so
what happened that made transition for you?
I actually visited hell. Yeah.
Okay.
I actually visited hell. He showed me, you're not going to go to heaven. I mean, he didn't tell me this, but, you know, I can put the pieces together. He said, you're not going to go to heaven. You're going to go to this other place if you don't, you know, follow me and put me first. And your works cannot get you there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to show you, what you'll be, you know, immersed in for all eternity if you don't, you know. And I fell asleep, and I guess I came out of my body a little bit. And at this point, my spirit was a smoke. Like, if you blow out a candle, mm-hmm. and you see the smoke rising, like, that's what it looked like. Like, I don't know else can explain it. And then I started traveling down instead of up.
Uh-oh. You know, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and what did, I mean, you're obviously no longer in your body, so
right.
Is there a feeling of, were you
yeah,
trying to cling,
feel...
like trying not to go or anything,
mm-hmm.
or was it just
No, I just
free fall?
Like popped out, and then it started going down.
Wow.
And it just started going faster and faster, and then I saw an orange pinhole light, and I got closer and closer, and then I could feel the heat. And then, next thing you know, I'm in the middle of hell. And the first thing that I felt was the hatred. The hatred was like a tangible thing. It was like a fog, you know. You know how you can go into a room and you can tell people aren't happy with you. You
right.
feel like, you know, you can cut it with a knife or something.
Right, you know the presence of it is
yeah,
right there.
Yeah. But this is a million times over. Like
wow.
this,
okay.
this, the hatred in hell is just overwhelming. And, then the next thing I felt was, the heat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously I've been on fire before on earth, and, the heat there in hell is a million times worse than it is on earth. On earth, it feels the way it looks. It, like when you see a flame,
mm-hmm.
you know, like that's
it
where
bends
you,
and it, yeah.
yeah, that's where you feel the pain, It hurts here, it hurts here, it hurts here. Like little pops of pain here and there. But in hell, it feels like acid. It feels like all over your body all at the same time.
Completely consuming?
Completely consuming. Not one inch of you gets a relief. And then I felt, the hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And, I even remember accepting the hopelessness because I knew I deserved to be there. And, like that story that Jesus told, about Lazarus, that, the rich man that went to hell, and,
right.
you know, it was a parable, but it very well could have happened. The rich man accepted it. He said, I will go just let me go and tell my brothers and my family not to come to this place. It's a horrible place. So, I had experience I accepted it, but the hopelessness there, I knew that there was nothing I could do, that I was going to be there forever. And I knew that I missed out. And so I'm feeling all these things, and then I can see. And I peer out into into this room. I fell into a house with no roof. And there was a hurricane of fire going on the outside of this house. And this house is tumbling like tumbleweeds. And, there was, these creatures in the room. And one was like, a gargoyle type looking one. That's the only one I really remembered because he was the biggest one and I was really focused on him, but there's these other little ones. And, there was this lady levitating on an altar. And she was wearing black sackcloth. And she had missing pieces of white hair. She looked like she was maybe 150 years old. You know, very veiny. She was just levitating. And just looked like she was enjoying levitating. And the main gargoyle demon, he was just perched there. And he pulled me without even touching me. He just didn't even touch me. Just pulled me. And I was, remember, digging my heels into the floor, trying not to go. And there's nothing I could do. And I didn't...
That was the first time, though, that you actually felt resistance, right? Like, because you were, when you were, you knew the hate was there, and you knew that your hope, that there was hopelessness there. But this is the first time where you're really putting up a fight.
Yeah, but the only thing I could do I couldn't move my arms or anything, or walk or anything. I was just, remember, trying to dig my heels into the ground. I think that's all I remember.
And then what happened next?
They pulled me right up to her, and then I woke up. And then I woke up, you know, crying, as you could imagine. You know,
yes.
And just so thankful that I'm not really there. And then I told my psychologist, and this happened like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, told my psychologist and doctors what happened, and they said, oh, it's just PTSD. Don't worry about it. So I was like, okay. So
that's a whole other level of post-traumatic stress right there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's things that I could not... I've never studied hell. I've never, it was never interest to me. I don't watch movies, horror movies or anything like that. So, it was just knowledge that I could not, you know, imagine.
Right.
And so,
do you find that you're in your ministry, you're talking to people that don't believe in it? Or are people afraid of it? What are you finding when you're out there?
No, in the ministry, at first, people, their eyes are just wide open.
Right.
Like, they're just like, oh my gosh. And then they hear the rest of the presentation, and I've had atheists walk in. I mean, every single atheist that's walked in has walked out non-atheist.
That's awesome.
All the, yeah.
Praise God.
So, so it's just, you know, when people open their mind and you know, just accept reality, you know, it's just really amazing. But I don't know if I actually went to hell, or if it was just a vision, or you know, it wasn't a dream, because there's too much. I mean, have you ever had a dream that you remember everything?
Yes.
3 years ago?
That it's not a dream. Yeah, I can tell you.
That you've actually felt
pain. You can feel everything.
Have you ever, have you ever felt pain in
the dream? No. Yeah. But not like that.
Yeah,
it wasn't a dream.
So, yeah.
I mean, there are visions, and there, I believe that they're supernatural manifestations. And, so in your ministry, you're reaching a lot of atheists. If there's anything you could tell someone out there who's not a believer right now, or who has a lot of doubt, what would you say?
Oh, what would I say? Just do the research on flagellum motors. Learn things like irreducible complexity. You know,
irreducible complexity.
Irreducible complexity. I don't have the exact definition for it, but I know the term. You know. They've used examples like if you take a mousetrap. Mousetrap has 5 different parts. If you take out one of these parts of the mousetrap, it won't work, won't function.
Right.
And they've done, I think it was Michael Behe, who's the one that, he's a professor, biologist, and or something like that. He's the one that came up with that term, and actually he went to court for because they were trying to take creation science out of the school system. So I don't know.
They're tearing up everything when it comes to having the expression of God anywhere in the school systems. And now they're even taking the Pledge of Allegiance out of the school. So for a long time it was, okay, we don't want to have God in anything. Now I just, it's, well... I won't say.
Yeah, we can go on forever about that. But what I would say is just look up the actual evidence for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even on our website, you know, there's things in there.
HowIKnow.org?
HowIKnow.org.
Okay.
Just, if it doesn't come up right away, HowIKnow.org, Converse, Texas.
Okay. And before we go, tell us about your paintings.
My paintings. It basically just started, when I just want to hang some stuff up in my house. I didn't really want to pay for it. So, I had friends come over. And they just thought it was really neat stuff. And, I was like, hey, you know, they're wanting it. I was like, well, you can buy it from me if you want. You know, I'm not going to just give it.
Right.
And so, I experimented with that for a while and see if it was, worth investing in business cards and stuff. And, it turned out it was. And so, now I paint and it's actually my wife's business. I'm just she's an art dealer. I'm just the I'm her employee.
There you go. Well, okay. Well, which one's your favorite?
My favorite one is
if there is one, because I'm sure there's many.
Let's see. Yeah, let's see which one's my favorite. I think my favorite one is the pelican.
Really?
That's my favorite one. Like, I held on to that one for so long. No one ever really wanted it. And, I couldn't understand why. It's just, I couldn't believe I did that.
It's beautiful.
But, a lot of people like the palm tree one. Not that one. That's cool too.
They're all beautiful.
Yeah. But I don't know. I don't really have a favorite. I was talking about the purple palm trees.
Yeah, it's a pretty sky. Looks like a.
It's one of my favorite ones. I enjoy doing. Done that one twice.
So if people want to purchase, do they go to your website?
Yeah, they can go to the website, give us a call, and we're trying to set that up. We're still learning as we go. You know, we didn't take any business classes or anything, so we're just learning as we go. But. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it.
Okay, so if they're going to reach you, then get you there at 361-207-2599.
Yes.
And you and your wife work as a team, too, in the ministry.
Yes.
So if they want to see more about what you're doing and have any questions maybe about faith,
yes,
they could reach you there,
too. Yeah, they could call us. We just really enjoy, we would really almost beg to have a presentation if you're a pastor, to give us a call, and see what we could do, anywhere in the country, like, as long as they pay for the gas.
No limits, right?
Yeah, we don't charge anything, and, we just want to share Jesus' love as much as we can. And
so who inspired you to become a painter?
I think, watching my mom, as I was probably like, maybe 5 or 6, and she was making templates because she would make these puppets and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I just watched her draw, and then my dad has this drawing that he did in pencil, and it's a mother with her baby, and I asked him, who did that? He's like, I did. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I got these artist parents, you know.
So. Right. So you're genetically predisposed to artistry.
Yeah. And, so I just started to ever since I was really young. And, it was Picasso who said that, I'm not too sure, but I think it was him. He said that every child is an artist, but the trick is to carry that on into adulthood.
Right. And so your mom and dad encouraged you, obviously.
Somewhat. In Alice, it's all oil filled and raising cattle. So it wasn't going to pay the bills or anything. My mom has this book, and it has like all the things that I've done my whole life. And she puts those out when I have a presentation or something. You know, when she's involved, she'll make sure she puts out. I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, how did your style develop?
Well, I don't know. I just started off with this simple little abstract design, and then just got better and better. Just kept on doing it, and haven't got to hold on to any of my art since because everyone buys it.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So, which one was your first? Is there one that's up there?
Those are one of my first ones. Those mermaids. That's actually one of my first ones. Yeah. My very first one.
I notice there's a lot of sky and nature in your art. Is it divinely inspired? Is there something about it that?
I think I just like trees.
All right.
I just like trees. I like trees. I like all kinds of trees, and I like what they do. You know, they build us houses, pencils, tables. You know, they house birds and feed. You know, this is the greatest invention God did. You know, was the tree.
And they're in the Bible.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you.
You can check out Mario's paintings at paintingsbymariolopez.com. Go there, email him, contact him there, or you can also go to his website, his ministry website, howiknow.org. That's howiknow.org, and find out more about the ministry that he and his wife have together, going around telling the world the good news of Jesus Christ. I'm Gigi Arnetta for the InfoWars Nightly News.
And thank you, Mario, for your incredible testimony. Now, last year about this time, there was a TSA opt-out and film campaign. But this year, InfoWars is running something very special. It's called We Will Resist TSA and NSA Tyranny, a $10,000 film contest. Now, be sure to get your entries in. You have till the beginning of the year to get those in. You can see the full list of rules and details on InfoWars.com. And if you win that, you will be a very grateful person, not only for the money, but also to bring awareness to the situations happening not only in our airport. We have the TSA Viper teams. These guys are spreading out. They're going to Super Bowls. They're going to presidential inaugurations and all kinds of things. So it's not just in your airport. You can't stay out of the airport and ignore this. You need to fight it on every front, and this is a great way to do it. And you may just end up with something to be very thankful for. Well, I'm Ja'Kari Jackson for the InfoWars Nightly News, and we'll see you again on Monday.
This is a conspiracy by the technocrats, by the ruling elite, by the eugenicists that want to dumb us down. This is the iodine conspiracy. Our government wasn't always a eugenicist-based predatory group. Back in the 1920s, the federal government pressured salt manufacturers and bread producers to add iodine because they knew that iodine deficiencies were causing massive decreases in IQ, birth defects, and it was a health crisis all across the United States and in Europe as well. In the decade after iodine was added to staple foods, there was a 15-point increase in IQs in the areas that had previously been deficient. So what did the federal government do a couple decades later? They took the good halogen iodine out and added another bad one, bromine. And they put the worst of the group, fluoride and fluorine derivatives, in our water supply and began using it as a pesticide on the crops. Let's be clear about this. Adding bromine to the food supply is banned in the EU, banned in Canada, and banned in many other nations because it is a toxic poison listed in those countries. I've done deep research on the globalist program to dumb down the population to make us more manageable. It is eugenics. And I personally take the highest quality form of unbound iodine, nascent iodine, in a kosher certified, non-GMO certified glycerin base. I've interviewed the experts, people like Dr. Brownstein and pharmacist Ben Fuchs, and of course Dr. Edward Grut, and across the board the consensus is iodine is the missing piece of the puzzle. and not just iodine, but high quality, unbound, pure iodine. Bottom line, this is something on record our bodies need. I've gone out and found the best source for myself and my family. I hope you'll visit InfoWarsLife.com and get our InfoWars Life Survival Shield. It really does incredible things. And we've got nothing but positive reviews from our listeners. And this also helps support our news operation and the InfoWar while we get the iodine we need and block the fluoride and the other members of the halogen that are so bad for our bodies. Check out the information. Do the research for yourself. Talk to your physician and then decide whether you want to drink fluoridated water that Harvard major studies admits is giving people brain cancer and bone cancer and lowering their IQ, or whether you want to find a high-quality source of iodine. Consult your physician, do your research, and make a decision. But whatever you do, don't just ignore this message, because all of my research shows this is absolutely key to getting people out of the brain fog that they've been artificially put into by the social engineers. Visit InfoWarsLife.com today.
Now you can watch The Alex Jones Show live as it happens at InfoWars.com/show.
You'll find links to all of our content there and a free 15-day trial for Prison Planet TV.
More than 60 movies and documentaries all in one place at InfoWars.com/show.